Yep, that was the issue.
All right, we are here on the continued hearing on the trustee's motion for approval of the sale of assets. This is what the balance of, I guess this is the separate motion. This is the sale of what we're calling the Medallic assets. I did see that a declaration got filed at about 5:30 last night. Mr. Guerin, did you serve a copy of that on Mr. Larson?
I did, Your Honor, by email.
Okay. You and Mr. Calvert are the only one up front, so I guess I'll just hear from you initially. I did take a look at that declaration. What is the status this morning? All right, coming up. And Mr. Larson, you come on up as well. Anyone else that wants to be heard this morning can come on up and sit at council table. And why don't we, since we have a few people coming up, why don't we have appearances for the record?
Good morning, Your Honor. Michael Guerin, Jane L. Gates, for the Chapter 11 trustee, Mark Calvert, who's here in the courtroom.
With your very appropriate tie, I see.
Thank you, Your Honor. Yeah. St. Patrick's Day tomorrow. Yes. We're starting the celebration this afternoon in my office.
So. Oh, well, I'm busy, but...
you're welcome. Your staff's welcome. So.
Thank you for the invitation. All right. Good morning, Mr. Larson.
Good morning, Your Honor. Christopher Larson, Larson Law Firm for Mr. Roger Mann.
All right. Good morning. And sir, you are?
Jerry Moran, owner and president of Metalcraft Mint.
Good morning, Mr. Moran. Welcome to our court. And good morning to you, Mr. Calvert, as well. So, all right, Mr. Guerin, why don't you bring us up to speed?
I will, Your Honor. So, just to take a quick step back and not to belabor this much, but the court's aware that the trustee's been involved in marketing the property of the estate since May of 2017. First in an effort to try to sell things as a going concern, and then more recently since we closed the facility in December with efforts to try to sell parts of the business, parts of the assets. We tried to sell them comprehensively. Eventually, what we come forward now with, we started with an auction process. We then shifted to, we found individual packages of assets that we brought forward to the court for approval of some specific sales. The court approved last week the sale of virtually all the equipment to Industrial Assets, and we're moving forward with closing that sale on Industrial Assets, perhaps conducting an auction in the Dayton facility with respect to the equipment. But the other packages of assets we continue to try to get sold, and the Metalcraft assets, I think the court might have said Medallic, but I think they are the Metalcraft assets is what we've been calling them, because we brought that forward under a motion to approve a sale with the Metalcraft Mint. When we originally teed this sale process up, we came before you and got bid procedures approved. We noticed those out to all the parties. There's been a couple of month long process to get this sale hearing in front of the court. And during this entire process, we never heard from Mr. May, from Roger May. Mr. May kind of parachuted in at the very last minute in the process, submitting a bid on the bid deadline. We knew nothing about Mr. May. We knew nothing about his resources, his capabilities, or anything like that. So it came as a surprise to us. There had been no due diligence done. The trustee wasn't familiar with Mr. May in any way. So it came as a surprise to us to see that the bid was received at all. When we got Mr. May's bid, we started to ask some questions of his counsel, and we had some email dialogue back and forth with Mr. Larson. And we learned just before the auction that there was an affiliation with Mr. Hansen, Mr. May and Mr. Hansen. That was not disclosed to us in advance. It was something we had to kind of ferret out in our discussions with Mr. May and his counsel. We did commence an auction. We talked to you about that last week, and we told you that we took some bids, and that the bid was a few bids. The bids went up to $825,000 for Mr. May and $810,000 for Metalcraft, at which point Metalcraft indicated that it was done. We recessed and we asked Mr. Larson to get his client on the phone so we could ask some specific questions of him about what his resources were, what his capabilities were, to look into the non-cash aspects of the attributes of Mr. May's bid. And when we started to explore those, there were concerns that the trustee developed in asking those questions. you know, we wanted to find a way to determine who the successful bidder would be at that auction. And at the end of the day, after asking all of those questions, what we determined was that Mr. May's bid was inferior to that of Metalcraft's, and we declared Metalcraft the successful bidder at the auction, and we came before you last week to ask for approval of that sale.
You left out the increased bidding.
And I do have a note on that, Your Honor. I will get there. But yes,
that's an important part of why I was unhappy with the process.
And I understand that. And one thing I want you to understand is those were unsolicited increases to the bids. After the bidding that we entertained, those were.
Mr. May's increased bid was unsolicited.
It was. And then,
correct me if I'm wrong, Mr. May made an unsolicited bid of $900, and then you or Mr. Calvert went back to Mr. Moran and said, can you bid $910?
Did not. We called Mr. Moran. Mr. Moran's here, and he can tell you exactly what happened. But we called Mr. Moran, and we informed him what had happened at the end of the auction process.
Right.
And we told him that there had been an increase of the bid to $900,000 by.
You don't think that's soliciting a higher bid?
Well, Your
Honor. You said unsolicited. That's not unsolicited. You called Mr. Moran and said, I got a higher bid. And
I don't want to parse the words with you.
Yeah.
I did not call, and neither one of us asked Mr. Moran to submit an additional bid. To the contrary.
Right.
We were informing Mr. Moran that we intended to go forward with his bid.
At 810?
We were intending to go forward and declare him the successful bidder. And what he said was, if it makes a difference, I will increase my bid to $910,000, right? We did not ask him to do that. That came unilaterally from him. And likewise, the subsequent bidding that has occurred, the subsequent offers from Mr. May are unsolicited. And we've been telling Mr. May since last Friday very clearly, we're not reopening the bidding. What we are intending to do here is we need to get to the bottom of these non-cash consideration issues to determine whether we can qualify or whether we want to entertain any offer from you.
I specifically ordered you to reopen the bidding. I'm interrupting you here, but I specifically ordered you to reopen the bidding. That's why I read the declaration and your position, and I am scratching my head.
Well,
defying what the court said.
That's not my recollection. That is not what I understood, Your Honor. And if I misinterpreted, my apologies. I did not recall that you directed us to reopen bidding. I think the colloquy we were having at the end of the hearing last week was, I think we were telling you Mr. Calvert had grave concerns and did not believe that he could entertain a bid from Mr. May based upon the present facts, what we knew about Mr. May and his capabilities. And we had a lot of discussion about concerns for customer treatment, concerns for creditor reactions, concern for what would happen with preservation of the dies, all of those things. And we were still talking about whether he could even qualify to be a bidder. That's my understanding of what we were talking about. And that's what we attempted to do. We immediately went back on Monday afternoon. We went back to Mr. May with a detailed list, asking him to tell him, here's some things that we think we need to get to the bottom of before we can go back and reopen bidding. Before we can entertain any other bids. And that was the purpose of the dialogue we were seeking to have with Mr. May during the course of the week.
No, I gather that, and I see the emails. I understand that you were trying to do that, but
I don't, Your Honor.
Yeah.
I'm sorry to interrupt. You interrupt the court.
Okay.
We saw no point in reopening bidding if we were at a place where we could not accept a bid from Mr. May.
If you want to take a minute to talk to your client, you may do so.
I think I'm good, Your Honor.
All right.
But I think what I heard the court telling us was, you have very clearly, you have concerns about the fairness of the auction process, and we're trying to address that, right?
Right.
The only way that I think we can do that, I think the disconnect here, and the reason that I think the auction process, if there is an appearance of unfairness in the auction process, the reason for that is that we did not get to the bottom of these non-cash issues before we commenced the auction. And for that, Your Honor, I think we have regret. We regret that we did not recess the auction, not conduct the auction until we had thoroughly investigated the issues that were of concern of the trustee with respect to his qualifications. So we're trying to go set that right. And the only way, frankly, that I can see to set that right is to step back and void the auction, determine the auction should not have occurred, and step back to the very beginning and basically say that we're going to come forward regardless. We would entertain, as it sits here today, the trustee would come forward and would support to bid the original offer that that Metalcraft submitted, and would tell the court that we want that sale approved, regardless of the price. Now, I know that the price, the dollars that are there, based on the unsolicited bidding of these other of the two parties, there could be some significant additional value there. And I'll let you hear from the parties as to whether they're interested in putting more money on the table to make that deal work. And to satisfy any concerns that the court may have with respect to value. But from the trustee's perspective, as we sit here today, what we've gotten to the bottom of is that Mr. May, despite our continued questions, he has no experience in the custom minting business. He has no factoring capability. He has no raw material supply. He has no facility to operate from. He has no facility to actually move the equipment and the dies to at this point. We probed on that question to try to get him to give us specifics about where he would move the materials to and how quickly he could move things out of the facility, which is of significant concern to the trustee. He has no ability to service any of the customer needs. We have grave concerns about his ability to protect the dies as they're moved someplace. He's made no commitment to cooperate with other purchasers if he's not the successful bidder with respect to the other sales that we are planning to bring forward to the court. That is a serious issue for the trustee's concern. He doesn't have a management team. He has Mr. Hansen, who's affiliated with this, which is a serious concern of the trustees. On the contrary, Metalcraft is fully capable of performing. The trustee is confident that Metalcraft does have the manufacturing capability, the organization, the ability to service customer needs, the raw material supply, the ability to timely remove the materials, has already worked with other potential purchasers in coordinating and segregating assets so that we could have a seamless sale process with respect to the other assets, and we would not risk the interruption of those other sales. So for all those reasons, we're confident that Metalcraft can perform. We are virtually certain that Mr. May cannot perform and cannot satisfy these non-cash concerns. Mr. May wants to throw as much cash at it. He may have plenty of cash, but cash, as we've talked about at the last hearing, is not the paramount consideration or the only consideration. It's the highest and best bid that we must entertain. And from the trustee's business judgment, which is the standard here, the trustee has concluded that the Metalcraft offer is superior. They should be declared the successful bidder, and we're asking the court to go forward and to approve the sale to Metalcraft. As to what the price would be, we are willing to go forward with the original $700,000 purchase price. If that is what we need to do to get the sale approved, we'll go forward with that price. We are aware that the Metalcraft is offered to put more money on the table than that. And of course, we'd like to have the additional funds. But what it takes to satisfy the court's concerns with respect to the fairness of the auction process is to go back to square one and to basically cancel the auction and say we're not going forward with an auction at all because Mr. May is not qualified, the trustee is prepared to do that to move the process forward.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Guerin. Let me ask you a few questions. I did see the emails, and I did raise issues myself at the last hearing about concerns that we don't create another universe of unsatisfied, unhappy people if a buyer can't perform. That being said, I'm looking at the bid procedures that you proposed, and is it fair to say that Mr. May was deemed have submitted a qualified alternative bid?
I think we did qualify Mr. May. Right. Initially, we did qualify Mr. May as a qualified bid.
So how do you now refuse to accept his bid?
You know, I think the issue is, do we declare him the successful bidder? I think we get to factor in a number of other considerations, not just cash, and I think that was one of the points that you raised when we were approving the procedures. So I think that regardless of whether we qualified him as a bidder and we entertained a bid, which we did, the issue is whether he should be deemed to be the successful bidder. And there, I think the trustees made a determination that he is not. And we've been consistent with that.
I do think there's a distinction, though, between someone that is a higher, may offer a higher and better bid, even though it may not be more money, versus someone that's qualified, that's just not qualified. Because if you're saying that Mr. May is not the best bid because he's unqualified, then there's no amount of money he could bid, which means he's should not have been qualified as an alternative bidder.
I think it's a fair question, Your Honor, as to whether we should have qualified, based on what we know now, whether right. we should have qualified Mr. May. But the facts are we did.
Right.
I think that there is a difference between just because he's qualified does not mean that he can be a successful bidder based on what we know now about his qualifications.
That comes back to fairness. You could qualify people, but they never have a shot, is what you've just said. You could make it such that the trustee is never going to sell, never going to allow you to be the winner, but will let your lawyer spend a week of his time negotiating and participating to be told you never had a chance. That's not fair.
Well, I think we would have had to spend that time before the auction to get to the bottom of those issues
and
determine whether he was or was not capable.
It should have been in your auction bid procedures that you needed to, that as a condition to being a qualified bidder, you needed to demonstrate an ability to perform. None of that's in the bids. I mean, there's no doubt that Mr. May submitted a qualified alternative bid and Mr. Moran ended up offering $910,000 because you put another bidder in. It's either not fair to Mr. Moran because you conducted an auction when you never should have, or it's not fair to Mr. May because you let him down the primrose path believing he could participate when he had no chance. And that's it's fundamental fairness that I'm having a real problem with here. I don't think just saying, well, let's just go back and just take $700,000, that wipes away the problem. I don't think it does.
Well, I'm trying to find a way to be fair to both parties, Your Honor. I think we appreciate that.
Yeah.
If it could be unfair to to Metalcraft and Mr. Moran if we allowed the process to go forward. But I will tell you that the facts that were necessary to determine whether there was any basis upon which Mr. May could be the successful bidder were not known to the trustee until the auction had already commenced. And that is not solely the responsibility of the trustee. That is because Mr. May came forward at the last minute, and we had to fully examine those issues. We had to sort of pry the information out of Mr. May. So,
I understand. I fully understand and acknowledge that some of this stuff came out. To be frank, some of it should have been anticipated. You've known Mr. Hansen has been trying to get his hands on the assets since the first day he was removed and Mr. Calvert came in. That's almost a year from now. So anyone that comes in that should have been, and if Mr. Hansen's involvement is a deal breaker, that needed to be in your bid procedures. Because if that's kind of sounds like what you're saying, if Mr. Hansen's involved, then you can't bid on the assets. And you knew Mr. Hansen was involved because you had another person, Mr. Parrish, trying to get his hands on the assets. So none of this should be a surprise that Mr. Hansen is going to try to be part of someone's bid. And if that was preclusive and the trustee would never sell to that person, it needed to be in your bid procedures.
Well, I think
I'm not sure I would have approved them, by the way, but if that was the trustee's position, you at least needed to ask for that or say that. You can kind of tell where I'm going here. Mr. Calvert wants to say something to you. Why don't I hear from Mr. Larson, and then I'll ask you, unless you want to say something right now that it's fresh in your ear.
I guess that Mr. Cal was pointing out to me that, you know, I directly asked Mr. Hansen's lawyer, Mr. Powers, whether Mr. Hansen was submitting a bid or had submitted a bid. He told me no. So I think that we were anticipating that
right.
Mr. Hansen would be involved with Mr. Parrish. Mr. Powers had come forward and had given a written offer, provided a written offer before.
Right.
That issue was known to us. We were prepared to deal with that. The issue Mr. May is now portraying that he's independent, right? His bid comes forward and he has actually suggested, what was brought forward to the court was this is independent of Mr. Hansen, and we have learned that that's not true. So I think those are developments that have arisen since the bidding process began.
All right, I understand. Okay, that's helpful. I guess before you sit down, let me just ask, all the questions you posed in your email to Mr. Larson, did you pose all the same questions to Mr. Moran?
No, we didn't send. Mr. Moran's been involved with due diligence and since January. We had, I think, a January purchase sale agreement with him.
Mm-hmm.
The trustees had an ample opportunity to explore and to understand who Mr. Moran is. So, no, I didn't need to send those questions. I knew that Mr. Moran's not affiliated with Mr. Hansen. We knew that he has a manufacturing facility and he's got active relationships with customers. That's all well known to the trustee. He has the ability to go forward and to take possession of these assets. He's been working on preparing to do that. We've observed that. So it wasn't necessary for us to go back and to write a detailed list of questions to Mr. Moran. We've already vetted that.
Well, okay. But I mean, but you get this kind of appearance of fairness in that you're asking Mr. May who's on his management team. You know who's on Mr. Moran's management team?
Well, I personally don't, Your Honor, but I know Mr. Wagner does and others.
Okay.
Mr. Mellicraft is well familiar to the management of the estate.
Okay, and you've done a research, federal court, state court filings to make sure Mr. Moran doesn't have consent decrees and other issues like you like to constantly remind me that Mr. Hansen has against him?
Well, I mean, Your Honor, the consent decree was something that I think the court...
I was involved with that, so I'm familiar with it. So I'm not... I guess you sent that to Mr. Larson, which is why it was attached to your email, but I'm familiar with all these things. I'm not saying that's always has to be done in every sale. I suspect that usually you don't, because typically trustee doesn't care. They sell the assets if the check clears... The buyer goes on and does its thing.
Right.
But this is a unique situation. And I agree that these are concerns the trustee should have. The problem is that these should have been outlined at the beginning. At the very least, Mr. Larson and his client have a legitimate complaint that their time has been wasted. And I don't know what to do about that. That's the cost of doing business, I suspect. But what you kind of said this morning is, based on what you know now, they never had a shot. And that's a concern I have this morning.
I understand, Your Honor.
Yeah.
With respect to the consent decree, I think that only relates to the affiliation with Mr. Hansen. That's the reason it's relevant. And it is important because... As we pointed out to Mr. May and his counsel, we think that's a carve-out from any order that the court would give selling free and clear, right? That there would be successor liability. Under that order, I think that if Mr. Hansen's involved, I think the buyer there would be a successor under the consent decree. So,
I think that very appropriate for you to send all that to Mr. Larson, because I mentioned that last week too, that if you have Mr. Hansen affiliated with you, you're going to have some issues. There are multiple consent decrees and out there dealing with Mr. Hansen. That being said, if that is in the trustee's view precludes you from being a successful bidder, it seems that should have been identified at the beginning, but I apologize if I'm repeating myself here. I've taken up your time. Let me hear from Mr. Larson, and then I may come back to you. Good morning, Mr. Larson.
Good morning, Your Honor. And once again, I want to thank the court for allowing me to appear, even though Mr. May is not a party.
Certainly.
And I have a very different recollection of what occurred last Friday than my esteemed Mr. Guerin has. It was very clear to me that the court reopened the auction. It was very clear to me that the quote, in fact, I wrote down the quote because I was making sure I had good notes to go back to my client with, that the court said that the auction was not fair or regular, nor did it appear to be fair or regular. Thereafter, you opened up the auction, reopened the auction. That evening, I sent a very detailed email to Mr. Guerin and Mr. Calvert asking very specific questions, which they got back to me on Monday with answers to those questions and then posed many questions to my client. I believe that I have answered their questions. One of the things that Mr. Guerin left out of his statement and arguments was that the person that we've submitted as who would be the manager, if Mr. May were deemed to be the highest and most successful bidder, whatever the proper terminology is, highest and best, excuse me, is Fred Holabird. Mr. Holabird was engaged in a auction yesterday. This morning he sent a picture of a statement to me on his phone because he couldn't get to a scanner. I have a copy of it here. I only have one copy because after dropping my daughter off at school this morning, I didn't have time to do more than one and be on time for the court.
I do have a question.
Yes.
So I don't quite understand in your email chain, and maybe you're about to tell me why, but you and Mr. Guerin also, I think, have the same question. Is you're saying that your client wouldn't have needed Mr. Hansen's involvement had the trustee responded to Mr. Holabird.
Correct.
I don't understand what that means. And who is Mr. Holabird? I mean, I've read everything that came in. I got it. So I understand generally who Mr. Holabird is, but who is Mr. Holabird?
Sure. Mr. Holabird is part of the management team.
Hold on one second. So sure. You just remember the microphones are really sensitive. I can kind of hear you. So either cover that up. It's just like I don't hear the words, but the faint whispering just enough to just be a little distracting. All right.
Thank you. Mr. Holabird is part of the management team of one of Mr. May's companies called Gold Leaf Placer, which owns 16,000 acres of leases on offshore Nome, Alaska. I think you probably saw Mr. Holabird's CV and list of publications that was attached to my email I sent to Mr. Guerin and Mr. Calvert. Part of the issue with this case, Your Honor, and I just mean to speak freely, is that what I think is a very concise issue mushrooms. And in the last week, I've actually received phone calls and emails from people that I don't know. I've received phone calls from people that have said things to me about Mr. Hansen and Mr. Calvert. I'm not going to engage in wasting the court's time with hearsay statements. However, I can tell you that Mr. Holabird informed me, this is the only hearsay statement that I will
That's fine. You're not the first or the last to relate hearsay.
was that Mr. Holabird knew a former employee of the Mint named Rob, I'm going to say his name incorrectly.
Vudagin,
something like that.
His name is referenced in your email.
Yes, Your Honor, and I always say it incorrectly, I apologize.
That's all right.
And after speaking to Mr. Vudagin a year approximately ago, Mr. Holabird contacted Mr. Calvert. Now, Mr. Holabird did say he cannot recall if it was a phone call or an email, but he did say he did contact him. And he never heard back. Mr. Holabird does have a letter addressed to Your Honor that I could submit. I will say, because Mr. Holabird took it on his phone, it is hard to read.
But I guess before I start looking at anything,
sure.
What is that? How is that relevant to the issues today?
I think number one, it addresses the issue of Mr. Hansen's involvement, and number two, okay. I think it addresses the issue of whether or not we can perform, should we be the highest and successful bidder.
Well, but so just tell me generally, why does it matter? Explain to me the comment that if Mr. Calvert had returned Mr. Holabird's call some time ago last year, Mr. May wouldn't need Mr. Hansen.
Correct.
All right.
Mr. Holabird is Mr. May's go-to person for all matters involving gold, coins, collectibles, Americana, so forth. Okay. If Mr. Holabird, as I understand it, would have received a phone call or communication back from Mr. Calvert and been told of the assets, Mr. May would have become involved at that point to either bid on them or attempt to obtain them. And at that point, he had not heard anything from Mr. Hansen. The reason why, as Mr. Guerin says, we parachuted in was because it's my understanding that Mr. Hansen notified Mr. May.
Okay. That doesn't really say why Mr. Hansen is involved going forward. It would explain how Mr. May found out later in the process. And I don't fault the fact that your client, quote, parachuted in. Your client made a timely bid.
Correct.
And so that's all that matters. So I don't think it matters whether or not the trustee was aware of the person before, nor do I think it's material that Mr. Calvert did or didn't contact Mr. Hollibird before. Mr. May is here.
Yes, sir.
And so going forward, why is Mr. Hansen involved? I guess that's the question. The question the trustee has. And I share the trustee's concern. That being said, it wasn't in the bid procedures. That's part of the problem. But that being said, any buyer who has Mr. Hansen involved is going to be facing hurdles, not from me, but from other authorities.
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Frankly, I think that the conclusion has been that Mr. Hansen will not be involved going forward. In fact, Mr. Hollibird's letter says, in quite strong language, that the second that Mr. Hansen becomes involved in this or any other business deal in which Mr. Hollibird is involved in, he's out.
Okay. That's not quite what I got from the email exchange in your response. I got something less equivocal.
That's right. That's why this letter says the.
Okay.
I didn't want to speak for Mr. Hollibird. I let him speak.
I'm trying not to argue with folks here, but Mr. Hollibird's not the buyer.
Correct.
Mr. May is the buyer. And,
correct.
And you speak for Mr. May.
Correct.
And I read your email. I didn't see an unequivocal statement that Mr. Hansen will not be involved. I'm not requiring that be made, but that's not the position I got from your response.
Correct.
This seems a little bit different than what I'm hearing this morning, though I'm hearing it not from Mr. May, I'm hearing it from Mr. Hollibird, who's not the buyer.
Correct.
Okay, I'm making sure. I'm taking notes here. Well, actually, Ms. Anderson's taking far better notes than me, but now I understand. Is Mr. May intending to have Mr. Hansen involved?
He is not.
Okay. I think that answers that then.
And during the course of the last week, while Mr. Guerin and Mr. Calvert have done due diligence, Your Honor, so have I.
Okay. Well, so that answers at least one issue. And I'm sorry, I once again have derailed your presentation, but please feel free to continue.
That's okay, Your Honor. I appreciate you just giving me the opportunity to speak. And to sum up, I'm sure you have more questions for other people, even for me, but to speed the process along, the court's order of last week reopening the auction was not followed at all. Thank you.
All right, thank you. I do have one more question for you then. Again, this was not in the bid procedures, but I do need to ask, how will your client serve customers going forward? I mean, what's your client's intentions? Because what's being sold, as we all understand, is the medallic name and the phone number and the IP that goes with the name medallic,
sure.
And then the 2,700 dies and related things. Those dies, we've all said, are essentially paperweights if you can't mint things with them.
Correct.
So your client presumably is going to obtain the ability to do that, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And where's your client in the process and developing his ability to do that?
Sure. As Mr. Hollibird points out in his letter, that he has many contacts in the industry as well as locally, what he referred to with me on the phone last night as mom and pop mentors that could do some of the work that was required. He also spoke yesterday to Mr. Calvert, because Mr. Calvert called him.
Mr. Hollibird did, or yes. Mr. May, Mr. Hollibird, okay.
Hollibird did, yes. Right. Can I submit this to the court so that it's part of the record, or am I going to keep it?
Well, if it's not been filed, it's not part of the record. Have you showed it to Mr. Guerin?
I have not.
All right. Well, I mean, I certainly can't see if you haven't shown it to Mr. Guerin, but I mean, you know, at this point, I'm not sure, you know, without testimony. I mean, I listen to folks and I take it all in, but at the end of the day, it's all kind of hearsay.
Sure. And Your Honor, I'm sorry to interrupt you, but just before ahead. I forget, I received an email last night from a Miss Hoff. I have no idea who that was or who that is. She called me this morning and had a brief conversation in which what I got out of the first part of it was that she was, her and her husband owned the building where.
Correct.
So then she said that she had an attorney named Mr. Ross, I believe, from Perkins Coie.
Mr. Smith.
Smith, I apologize.
That's quite all right.
At that point, I said, ma'am, I cannot speak to you any longer because you're represented by counsel. So I want to make sure that everybody knew that I did have a conversation with somebody who had an attorney. But once I was told that she had an attorney, I ceased all communications with her.
All right. Mr. Smith is not here today.
But I will follow up with him.
All right.
So yeah, he knows.
All right.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Let's see. Mr. Moran, thank you for being here. If you'd like to say something, you may. You're not required to. And if you would, you can, as long as you just pull the microphone close to you, you can sit there.
Sure. You know, I don't have any prepared remarks. I was just kind of here more from the standpoint if you want to know and need to know a little bit about the Medallic Art business and how it is operating, I would be able to share that with you because we've had a lot of customers calling us because since the mint closed January, we've been servicing a lot of those customers through cutting our own dies for them and producing product for them. The college and university business that they service, which is probably 75% of their business, really happens between February 1st and May 1st, and they expect a three-week turnaround time on that product. Now, you would say, well, you should order it in advance. They're colleges and universities, and it's probably the last thing on their plate, and someone assigns them to get a chain of office, a mace, or graduation medals. So we've been getting a lot of those calls, and it's been they're nervous when they find out Medallic Art's no longer in business. So when we talk about, or not we talk about, when I think when the group talks about the ability to service the clients, it's really today, not 6 months from now. Now, nobody can stop Mr. May from spending his money however he wants to spend his money. If we're looking to service clients, that window is very short. And if you look at mom and pop mints being able to produce the product, there are very few mints in North America that will produce brass and bronze a quarter inch thick for 3 or 4 inch medallions. And Medallic Art is one, Metalcraft Mint is another. I do know from doing research, I've called every mill making brass and bronze and quarter inch, we own it all. There's none available in the open market. So if Mr. May, no matter how much money he wants to spend, unless he flies it in from overseas, there's no brass or bronze available to make the product in a timely fashion.
All right, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Moran, appreciate that. Which that begs the question, why was there an auction if only one party can service the customers? That's kind of what I heard Mr. Moran just say. He's got does trustee disagree with that? I mean, it begs the bigger question, why was there an auction to begin with? You don't have to have an auction.
I understand, Your Honor. I mean, I think the inventory issue is something we weren't aware of until very recently. So yeah. That's something that Mr. Moran's brought
up. And I believe that. I mean, we're all learning, and that's one of the both joys and pains of being a Chapter 11 lawyer and trustee is you have to learn a new business, and you're learning a lot of stuff on the fly. So, you know, assuming that's the case, that's an interesting tidbit. Anyway. You've heard Mr. Larson. Anything else you'd like to add?
Actually, I will tell you, it's a surprise to us to hear Mr. Larson say affirmatively that Mr. Hansen will not be involved. That's the first we've heard of that.
Right, because he hadn't done it. I realized that. There were multiple emails, and that was not said. So I recognize that too.
And that's a bit of a game changer. I will tell you that. Yeah. I mean, that because it opens up questions about whether could we have, and I've reached out to Mr. Larson. I've tried to call him and explore walking through these issues. We've not been able to connect and have a conversation about that. It's all been done by email. But I think there still are these open issues out there about how could Mr. May perform otherwise? And I think we told the court that we had explored the possibility that Mr. May would come in and buy all of the assets and take the lease over and move forward. And would he have a facility and the capability of moving forward? That would have to be done very quickly. But I'm just telling you, it's a reaction from the trustee and that this disclosure and a commitment, a solid commitment that Mr. Hansen's absolutely not going to be involved, and that would be part of the understanding that the parties would have going forward, is a bit of a game changer. That being said, I mean, I think we are here, Your Honor, we need to get these assets sold. And I think we are here trying to move forward with having a sale approved. And I think we are prepared to go forward with the Mailecraft sale.
Let me ask you then, so I want to get a handle on kind of the urgency here, and I understand that this is kind of the time of the year where a lot of the business gets done, universities and schools for their graduations. Does the estate have a bunch of unfulfilled contracts at the moment, or is this just prospective business that will be lost if you can't get it sold soon?
That's a question for Mr. Calvert. Right.
Yes. Your Honor, we have not had, do not have signed contracts. However, we have 10, 15, 20 years of producing those same things for those same clients in the same time frame and a proven track record of doing it. So, yes, I would say we have contracts based on what's transpired over the years,
right.
But there's not a written signed document that says, all right, we need 150 of these for this year.
So it's if you don't sell it now, it's like when I sold a ski retailer, selling it in December at a whole lot less value than selling it in September. I understand.
Yes.
So I guess maybe in a little more than that, Your Honor, because one of the principal issues we've got the dies, right? And how does the customer move forward to get its product produced? I think that would mean somebody else would have to create a die, and would be additional cost to that. So it would be more difficult, I think, for customers.
Well, and then you'd never have a buyer that would want to buy the estate's dies because the customers have gone out and gotten new dies somewhere else. Though, and it sounds like only from Mr. Moran, if that is the case. You may need to vet that a representation as well, because if that's the case, then there is no other potential buyer. The court remains troubled by this auction process. And you can stand or you can sit. The court's going to deny the sale, and you're going to have to start all over. The auction process from beginning to end has been unfair. If you qualify a bidder, that bidder participates, you then can't say you could never have won. And that seems to be the trustee's position today. Now, trustee's defense, there are things that you may not have known about, and that if you knew now, you would have put in your bid procedures that would have made sure that, or would have resulted in Mr. May not participating. But that didn't happen, and Mr. May participated. So it's either extremely unfair to Mr. Moran because you conducted a bid and the price went up, and I know that you're coming forward with it now to say we'll go back to the $700,000. I don't think that washes away the unfairness. Or it's unfair to Mr. May because you accepted him as a qualified bidder. For 2 weeks, he's been part of the process, and now you're saying, no, there's really no amount of money you can bid that would let you in, that the trustee would ever accept to be a winning bid. That is unfair to everybody involved. My understanding from what's in one of your emails, Mr. Guerin, is that Mr. Moran is interested in other assets, and strikes me that if his interest in those other assets is contingent on him purchasing these Medallic assets, then I'm not sure why you would have an auction at all. It seems that if you might lose those other, that other sale or other sales because Mr. Moran, and I keep saying Mr. Moran, Metalcraft is not able to buy these particular assets, then having an auction exposes you to losing those other deals. So, you know, trustee can ultimately do what he wants, or he can ask to proceed how he wants, but the court decides yes or no, and the court on this sale decides no. You will need to start again. You can either get new bid procedures or just do a straight-up sale. I understand the urgency of the situation, but I made it clear last week that I thought how this auction was conducted was extremely unfair, and I said to start again. Instead, you doubled down on the unqualified bidder aspect, and the result is the court is denying your sale. So that was the risk you took by not following the court's instructions. So for those reasons, the motion is denied without prejudice. Anything further, Mr. Larson?
Yeah, I have a question. I know that Mr. May submitted a cashier's check as per the bid requirements. And my question is, since we're starting all over, and it sounds like there may not even be a bid procedure, and if there is, there could be different numbers, I would ask for the return of that check today if possible.
The check will be returned today.
We've already offered that, Your Honor.
All right, so the check will be returned. I see you looking at the calendar, Mr. Guerin. I know you're going to want something on shortened time.
Not necessarily. I think that I'd just like to see whether we could agree on a date, because I think we will need to come forward. You know, we've got time pressure, but I think we will need to come forward with an alternative sale. And I think you have a calendar on the 20th.
I've got a calendar. Let's see. So this is, where are we? We're on the 16th. So I've got a calendar on March 23. That's too soon, probably. March 6th, March 20. I'm sorry, April 6th, April 20, May 4. I mean, every other Friday, I've got a commercial calendar. So any of those days are open.
All right, Your Honor. I think we're going to shoot for the 20th. I think we're going to have to work this week to get a deal, this coming week, to get the deal pulled back together again. And that means going back and looking to see whether we're going to put different assemblages of assets. You're going to have to go back and re-canvas. So I'm looking at the 20th. I do want to confirm with this last sale, we did the mailing matrix that the court had ordered in the sale procedure or the notice procedures.
Yes.
And that was pursuant to your instruction. And I want to make sure we can do that again. We'd have to do a notice to the entire matrix to put that motion on the calendar.
Let me think about this. Let me think that. Is it your intention I think you do need to start again. Do another ex parte motion for approval of the notice. I mean, depending upon the sale motion, you know, you're gonna post that again on the websites. So it's gonna be a different motion. But you probably want to have an order approving it. So just do the same ex parte.
All right.
All right. What are we gonna do with the sale of the other dies? I thought that I was gonna see a motion for approval of a process for that. And is that coming down the pike soon? I know you've been busy with this situation.
We have, Your Honor, and I will tell you, Ms. Willig is here, who represents one of the potential purchasers of those dies. And I think folks have been waiting to see how this would play out before we move forward with that other sale.
All right.
And I will tell you that I do think that, this could impact how the trustee wants to approach moving forward with those sales. Do we want to try to package those assets up? I mean, one thing I think that's on the table, frankly, is talking to Mr. May about whether he wants to come back and do a global sale.
Now that you know Mr. Hanson's not going to be involved, this may open up some possibilities.
Right.
Now,
understood.
I mean, Mr. Moran is sitting here probably going, darn it. but this is what happens in bankruptcy sometimes, sir.
It's changed the landscape a bit.
I'm sorry?
Changed the landscape a
bit. It changes the landscape, and I've got to try to, you know, it's as I said at the last hearing, it not only needs to be fair, it needs to appear to be fair. And you've done nothing wrong, sir. Let me be 100% clear. You've done everything right, as far as I can tell. I think people, while I'm sounding critical, I think people are trying to do their best under the circumstances, but I've got to protect the integrity of the process. And that's the reason for the court's decision today. But that may open up some other possibilities. So you know what I'm looking for. I'm going to look for some sort of ex parte motion to approve a form of notice. If you want bid procedures, I'll do those on shortened time. Remember that the 23rd, Judge Brandt's going to be taking over my calendar. So anything that's really hairy, he might kick over. So just keep that in mind. Though I don't think the form of an order. Well, you'll do that ex parte, the form of the notice. But like bid procedures, if you want to do that, you can do those on shortened time, or certainly do the motion. But I'll likely approve it, because I do understand the urgency. I don't want to have the estate lose the value that might be out there for someone. And given that you've already noticed the sale to Metalcraft, if you want to come back and to sell these assets again, we'll likely entertain an order shortening time, much shorter than I might normally do so on a 363 sale. Because I think the objections have already been fleshed out.
That's helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Anything further from anyone? All right. Thank you, everyone. Court will be at recess.
All right.
Thank you.
Where's he going?